everybody. Welcome to Texas. We're going to start with Representative Atkins here this morning. We don't have a quorum yet, but we want to get started because we have a full agenda. And so, Representative, you're not ready?
Well, I'm always ready.
Okay.
The proponents for this bill are actually in a hearing on this bill, I believe, in the Senate right now. So they asked if we could keep an eye out for them and hear it when they get here. But Madam Chair,
we shall wait. That's fine. Why don't we go with Representative Dill, who is here, and you just let us know, Representative Atkins, when you're ready. And so, Representative Dill, if you want to join us for House Bill 1333, Representative Dill moves House Bill 1333 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Chair Lucheski. Members, I have the A1, the 1333 A1 amendment that I'd like to adopt to get the bill in the shape that I need it in for discussion, so okay. I'll move the amendment.
And we don't have a quorum yet, Representative Dill, so we're going to hold on that motion, and okay. We'll just go to the bill with your author's amendment.
All right, very fine. I have Mr. Doyle here to explain the bill. Basically, this has to do with trying to even out the playing field on a sales tax exemption issue regarding emergency our ambulances and equipment that are used by other first responders, etc. So, Mr. Doyle, if you could introduce yourself and to the board as we propose to amend it.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is O.J. Doyle, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. As Representative Dill indicated, what this is doing is clearing up some technicalities in the law so that all emergency vehicles owned by an ambulance service will be treated the same for purposes of taxes. And ambulances are exempted across the board from just about everything from fuel tax to sales tax, but the quick response vehicles, which are really SUVs equipped like an ambulance, not intended to transport people, and these are a valuable tool, primarily in the rural areas, they're taxed like commercial vehicles. And so we would like to have them all in the same thing because they're all used for saving lives.
Thank you, Mr. Dell. Representative Dell.
Well, I'm just my experience that I'm a former city administrator, as some of you may know, and I mean, we have ambulances. We don't pay sales tax on the ambulance, but in the same building that was run by the same people, the same ambulance services attendants, we have also vehicles that are used to be like a first attack type of a vehicle to get there the quickest, get there the fastest, have the necessary equipment on it to do emergency first response, and the ambulance comes and stabilizes the patient and moves them on to the next facility. And we pay sales tax on those items, and that's what this bill is really all about. So with that, I stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Are there questions for Representative Dill? Representative Dill, I'm just looking at the note from revenue here. I see it's a negligible, so for members, that's less than a $5,000 cost to the state, if I'm understanding that correctly. I'm getting some nods over there. So that clarifies the cost on your bill. I think what we're going to have to do, Representative Dill, because we still don't have a quorum, is we're going to actually move your bill and your author's amendment after we do your next bill, because I think we're okay on this, unless Mr. Doyle had something he wanted to add. Nope. Okay, if not, thank you for the presentation on House File 1333. Appreciate it very much. And Representative Dill, did you want to take up then... I don't have the number. I apologize.
Yeah.
House File 1458.
Yes. Madam Chair, this is... can we move it without a quorum?
We're getting close. I just started talking. We're going to move it pretty soon here.
Okay. Madam Chair... are we at a quorum? I think they're coming in. They're landing like geese
we're
right now.
For one more body. One more body.
Want me to go out and walk in?
I should count as two. As big as I am. Okay, Madam Chair, do the bill, and then we'll move it when we get a quorum. House File 1458 is another parity type issue, but a little more significant in terms of people and their general... we talked about a moment ago about emergency type situations where people's lives are in peril. This is about just life in general and trying to establish your life and own a home in Minnesota. So this is a little bit more on the beginning of that food chain. There are two, in terms of manufacturer's homes, as I understand it, manufactured homes are homes that are moved to the site and they have a frame and wheels and things of that like. So think of those in terms of like a trailer home type of thing. They're called manufacturer's homes and they are built to a federal code, and that all of the underpinnings that I earlier discussed stay with the home on site. Then there are the modular homes that are built more in terms of like stick-built homes that are then moved on a trailer or a set of underpinnings that are then removed and taken away from the site, and the home is set on a foundation. Now, on the manufactured home, which is the home that moves on its own frame and its own wheels, there is 65% of the cost of the home as sold to the consumer is sales tax exempt. In the event of a modular home, a stick-built home that's moved on something that the wheels and underpinnings are removed and sat on a foundation, 100% of the home is subject to sales tax. So if you were to purchase kind of an average-priced modular home versus a manufactured home, you'd have a $6,500 sales tax bill on the modular home, but you would only have a 35% or $3,500 sales tax bill on the manufactured home. Now, Madam Chair, this bill, as you know, has been before this committee before. It's been in the Senate bill in some years. It's been, as I've understood, in the House bill in some years, but it's really never made it all the way home. The significance of this is that when people go out into the marketplace to buy one of these homes, they have to finance this extra sales tax. Where if they buy a manufactured home, a home that has its own wheels and framework that stays with it, they don't have to finance all of the sales tax because 65% is exempt. So what we're trying to do is to get a kind of a level playing field on this. And we have Mr. Bruner here from the manufactured home manufactured home association, and he can further explain this to you, and then we'll stand for questions. I had a little problem getting to understand the dynamics, personally, of modular versus manufactured. It's just kind of you have to kind of have this paradigm that you can understand how this really works. So without trying to make it sound cheaper or more expensive, a trailer house versus a house. That's how I have to think of it. But I'm simplistic. So, Mr. Bruner?
Excuse me, Representative Dell, Mr. Bruner. First, what I'm going to do, now we have a quorum, is I'm going to accept Representative Marquardt's motion to approve the minutes of Wednesday, February 28th. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And now I want to move House File 1333. Representative Dill moves House File 1333. And Representative Dill additionally moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, motion carries, and I will lay over House File 1333 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and I will, Representative Dill now moves House File 1458. Thank you. Mr. Bruner, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association, and the association is a statewide trade organization that represents both manufactured homes and modular homes in Minnesota, and Representative Dill did a good job of sort of distinguishing between the two, although a big difference in terms of a manufactured home or today's manufactured home versus trailer homes are that trailer homes are the older homes not built to a code. Today's manufactured homes, as compared to modular homes, they're very similar in terms of their construction standards, and as Representative Dill pointed out, the big difference is the modular home is built to the state building code, the IRC, the residential code. The manufactured home is built to a federal building code. And probably the only way you can tell, at least when an appraiser goes out to do an appraiser for a mortgage, is to look to see is the frame integrated and still under the manufactured home when they look into the basement to see, versus the modular home when they transport it. The frame is removed and the home is put on the basement. That's the biggest difference. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same components. They're built in the same plan. But the big disparity is the sales tax that's paid. on a modular home versus a manufactured home, and that is a manufactured home is taxed at 65% of the cost of the home to the dealer or sales center. And the idea with that in the legislature this number of years ago is to try to even out and not tax the labor component of the home, so there's a little more parity with site-built construction where it's taxed, where just the materials are taxed. The modular homes, however, are taxed at 6.5% of the full sales price. And there was no reason for that happening when tax law was written. It's just at that time there were very few modular homes being built. I mean, today there are just as many modular homes built in Minnesota as there are manufactured homes. And the problem is that on the modular homes, even though you can't really tell the difference between it and a manufactured or a site-built home, you're paying that higher tax rate on the full sales price. And what the bill does is just to level the playing field, takes out, if you will, the 35% that is removed from manufactured homes, so that the consumer then is just the best we can calculate paying on materials. And most modular homes in Minnesota are sold through a sales center. There are situations, but it's not the majority, where the home is brought by the builder at the plant and installed on the lot, and there may, you know, in that case there isn't a sales center involved. That's the minority of cases. Most are sold through a sales center. So what the bill does is just simply level the playing field, taking out, if you will, that labor component.
Thank you.
Thank you, Manager.
Representative Zelda, do you have another testifier who wants to comment? Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. Dean Minardi with Easy Housing of Duluth. We are I'm a partner of a retail sales center that we sell both manufactured and modular homes. You know, it's quite obvious. The reason I'm here is, you know, the consumer for the last number of years has paid, a significant amount of money just because of a choice of going with a modular home versus a manufactured home. You know, to put it in numbers, they're paying $3,500 per $100,000 on a modular home, and our costs are being driven just by, you know, not just the labor anymore, but the material costs as a builder, no different than a site builder. They've experienced the same thing. However, a site builder does not have to pay that tax on his labor or profit, for that matter. He pays the tax based on the lumber and the material cost. And all we're asking is that with a modular home, that would be put on somewhat of the same playing field as a site builder and as a manufactured home tax.
Thank you for that, for your testimony, Mr. Minardi. Are there questions for Mr. Bruner, Mr. Minardi, or Representative Dill? Representative Dill, you're doing really well here this morning. Everyone's just in complete agreement with you.
Madam Chair, there's a cost to this bill. There has to be a cost to the bill. I haven't seen a note on this. But there must be a cost because, I mean, obviously we're collecting the sales tax. I'd encourage the chair and the members to give here we have the bill before us. Looks like in 08, $1.4 million, in 09, $1.6, and then about the same amount in the tails. I'd really encourage you to give some strong. I know there's a cost, and I know that this is real money. This isn't money that we can just, you know, imagine. But we need to think in terms of these are people that are buying these homes that are in their starter of their life, a lot of them, that are beginning to raise families, people that are going to be taxpayers in this state in the future, people that are going to put children, we hope, into our schools. And this is a very important part of our growth in our communities, both in town and in the metropolitan areas as well as out in the rural areas. And so I'd really encourage us to take a little deep breath on this one and see if we can't finally get some parity in this particular issue. It is of real importance to us. I mean, you only need to go out of the north into Senator Bach's district and Representative Murphy's district out of the north side of Duluth on Highway 53 and see the significance of this industry to northeastern Minnesota, because, I mean, you have the who's who of manufactured and modular homes located as you exit Duluth to the north. And that is, I mean, it's just so dominant. It just leaps right out at you on both sides of the highways for a long distance, and that's how significant it is. And we're really forcing these people. If you think about a $3,500 penalty on $100,000, and then you have that at 7 or 8% over a 30-year period, to a starter family, you're really, you know, when you finance that $3,500, you're really talking some serious money at the end of that mortgage period. So I'd encourage you to take a strong look at it and try and help these younger families, predominantly younger families as I perceive them, to get into a home of their own and have some pride and ownership. You know, a home constitutes usually most families' net worth at the end of their life cycle, you know, their home and their property. And so I think that's the significance of this.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Dill, for bringing this forward. I think it is a fairness issue, and not only in your district, but in the area I live, we have a lot of these homes being put up. And you're correct, they are for the starter home. We're also seeing a lot of retired people putting these homes up. So it is a big factor, and when we look at the cost of this in the big picture of things that we do around here, I think this is a fairness issue. We've looked at it, I think, the last couple of times anyway, and if we can find the dollars, I think this is a good place to get the fairness back on board. And as you stated, we're seeing both sides of the spectrum. We're seeing first-time home buyers, and we're seeing retirees building these homes. So thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will lay over House File 1458.
Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, members.
Thank you. And we will now, Representative Atkins has waited, and we will move to House File 1144.
Madam Chair, I still don't see my
still waiting.
Witnesses,
okay.
But if you don't have anybody else waiting,
that's okay.
I'd be happy to present.
That's okay. Do we have, is Representative Garofalo here? I don't see him, no. And Representative Hillstrom is not here yet. So you know what we're going to do instead? And Representative Simpson knows, I talked to him about this morning, we're going to call a recess for a half hour. And I would like to announce that the majority members on this committee are going to meet in room 500 North. And so we encourage you to come upstairs to 500 North. And Representative Simpson, you have an announcement?
And the minority members, we will be meeting in room 346 for this half-hour time frame also.
So we will recess, and we will return in a half hour. That will be at 10 to 11. The committee is in recess. We've been in recess, members. Thank you for returning. And I'm going to call the meeting back to order. We're going to hear Representative Hillstrom's bill, Representative Atkins' bill, and Representative Garofalo's, and we've got 30 minutes. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. And Representative Hillstrom moves House File 1156 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I hope that you'll give this good consideration. Currently, healthy foods that are in vending machines are taxed with sales tax. However, if you purchase them at a local convenience store, they would not be. And so I'm bringing forward this bill in hopes that two things happen. One, that you get some parity between convenience stores and vending machines. And second, that there's a potential that it will increase the use of healthier items being chosen in the vending machine. So with me today, I have the test drive. If you want to introduce yourself, then you can talk about that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Rob Layton, and I represent the Minnesota Automatic Merchandising Council, which is an association of distributors of vending products, both food items and beverage items. And with me today is Peter Jude, who is the current president of the council, and his family has been involved in the vending industry for over 50 years. And I'd like to just make a few comments and then turn things over to Peter Jude. House File 1156 has been dubbed the Healthy Foods Initiative because we're dealing with six specific healthy items that are sold out of vending machines. And it really is an issue of tax policy fairness. The exact same items, and we're talking about milk, water, fruit, 100% fruit juice, yogurt, and salad. Those are the six items. Those same items, if they're sold in a vending machine, have a 6.5% sales tax. If they are sold across the street in a convenience store or in a grocery store, there is no sales tax. So we think it's a fairness issue and we think that these same items ought to be treated the same for tax purposes. The other issue, then, this issue's been around. I should tell you, I'm sure, I know the chair is fully aware of this. In the past, this issue's been around specifically with regard to milk and water. And it's had legislative support. It's been supported by the Milk Producers Association, by dairy farmers, and it's had support of schools and people who want to make sure there's more healthy products that are going to be sold to students, which is an ongoing issue for schools and school districts. Schools will benefit from this legislation in two ways, and Peter Jude can address it in more detail. Almost every school has a contract and receives commissions from the sale of vending products at the school. If there is not going to be a sales tax collected on these six items, that would increase the amount of commissions that the school receives. So they benefit in that way. The other way they're going to benefit is we believe that if there's a sales tax exemption on these products, we believe that the healthier products will be stocked to a greater extent, and we hope that if they're stocked to a greater extent, made more widely available, that students would consume them. So we really think those are the two angles that you need to consider on this bill, both tax policy fairness, and hopefully we'll do something to get healthier products to students. And I'll turn things over to Mr. Jude.
Thank you, former Representative Layton. Nice to see you back at the Tax Committee. Welcome, Mr. Jude.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter Jude. I'm the owner of Jude Vending, which is located out in Maple Lake, Minnesota. And I'm also president of our Minnesota Automatic Merchandisers Association. I'd like to thank you for your time and also for your past support on this bill. There's three areas, again, like Rob has mentioned. The tax fairness is the key issue to us in our industry. But also we see a benefit to the consumers and also to the schools, again, as Rob had mentioned. Again, the tax fairness is just that, again, many of the same identical items sold in convenience stores and grocery stores are not subject to tax, and that is our largest competition through our industry. And through this exemption, again, you'd have some healthier items that would be sold and potentially at reduced prices. And we have seen that just even a 5 or 10 cent difference in prices does help increase the sales of healthier items. An example of that just more recently is we actually reduced yogurt in one of our vending machines, and the sales did increase. So there is a benefit there. But then also for the schools, just with the commissions, for most schools, the sales tax is deducted before a commission is paid. And again, if there were no sales tax on these items, their commissions would go up automatically. So that would be a benefit to the schools right off the bat. One other area is how do the vendors keep track of this. Most vendors, we have inventory control with all the items that we sell that we track through our warehouse and through the vending machines. So it is easy for most vendors to keep track of the items, whether it's water, juice, yogurt, and salads that are sold through the vending machine, so it shouldn't pose a problem that way. And again, just the tax fairness is the main issue, and we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Jude. Questions for Representative Pilstrom, Mr. Jude, or Mr. Layton?
Madam Chair.
Representative Yaros.
Thank you. At one time, I had a bill to ban so-called junk food in vending unless they had, you know, juice and granola bars or, you know, fruit and so on. And, of course, I didn't get very far. But I think that probably the reason that you... The good and not so good vending products are taxed is because of practical reasons. You know, the pop and the candy is taxed in grocery store or in the vending machine. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so you probably just for, and I've been a business out in business, and for practical reasons, you just put in sales tax. Is that right? It's easier for you to have sales tax on everything rather than, you know, this thing is going to have sales tax and the other one is it's more difficult to control it and so on.
Well, actually, Representative, actually even through the convenience stores, everything is tracked through the computers now. So it would be the same as through the vending.
And the machine, sorry, Madam Chair. And the vending machines are computerized now, is that right?
Okay. Yes, and most vendors, you have control over your inventory that goes through that. I could tell you what is actually sold out of section A1 and how many of that item was sold.
Oh, you're so smart.
So, yeah. The computer.
Thank you. Other questions? If not, we appreciate the testimony, and thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I will lay over House File. I always lose them. 1156 for possible inclusion in the honors tax bill. Thank you very much. And now I'm going to, Representative Atkins is going to move House File 1144. We appreciate Representative Atkins' flexibility this morning here and making sure we've got the right people in the room for this bill. Thank you, Representative Atkins.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair, that you like my flexibility in terms of it was the chair and the committee administrator, though, that allowed us. We were first up, and you let us go a little later so we could have some folks here that actually know what they're talking about. House File 1144, you all know this kind of ornery, sticky issue that we've got with folks paying sales tax on capital equipment. And if we were to, and then they get refunded in the next biennium, and it's all a wonderful thing and all of that. The problem with that is that all that money goes out of their pockets. They can't use it to invest and build their businesses in the meantime. The question is, can we really afford to do all of that? And I don't know if we can or not, but if we can, I'd love to. If we can't, then we got to sort of pick and choose which ones make the most sense. And what this one does is it would allow for those in the printing industry to be exempt from that. The point of the printing industry is that everything is, we've got logging creation of paper that the governor has proposed be exempt currently. This is the third leg of that stool. Just about every business I know makes some use of printers, paper, in order to make their business go. Hopefully this would be the kind of thing that would lift all ships. If we can't apply it across the board, at least we can apply it to this segment of the industry that has a domino effect then on all businesses, or virtually all businesses. And so everybody is lifted by virtue of taking on this one. With that, I do have Mr. Jessen here, who is a printer and desires to address the tax committee, and he's got some good comments for you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Welcome, Mr. Jessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mark Jessen. I appreciate this opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1144 on behalf of the printing industry of Minnesota, the trade association that represents Minnesota's printing and publishing industry. According to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the printing and publishing industry is the largest manufacturing industry in Minnesota. In 2005, Deed reports that Minnesota's printing industry had 75,000 employees, over 3% of all Minnesota workers. For every 100 direct jobs in the printing industry, an additional 133 jobs are created in Minnesota's economy. Minnesota's leading printing and publishing centers are located throughout the state, with about two-thirds of the jobs located in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. I own Jessen Press, a small printing company with 24 employees located in St. Louis Park. The company started in Minneapolis in 1952. My father began working as a shop manager for the company in 1959, bought the company in 1967. In 1969, he moved the company to St. Louis Park, and I bought the company from him in 1995 when he retired. I literally grew up with ink in my veins, and my children tell me every day when I get home from work that I smell like the ink man. So, although we're a small family-owned business, we have to invest in the most expensive technology in the industry to stay competitive. Our state-of-the-art equipment includes extensive pre-press computer graphics and layout equipment. I own 4 Heidelberg presses, as well as complete bindery and mailing capabilities. We have to continually upgrade our equipment to compete in what has become a global printing industry. You would be amazed at the number of Minnesota companies that are having their printing done in China or elsewhere around the world. To compete in this global market, Minnesota's printing companies have to work harder, smarter, and faster. Earlier this session, you heard testimony on several different bills introduced by Representatives Hillstrom, Erickson, and DeLaForest to repeal the capital equipment tax. Minnesota's printers support the complete repeal of the capital equipment tax. The testimony at this hearing highlighted the problems with this tax and the burden on small companies such as mine to pay the tax, then have to fill out the forms and wait months to get that tax refunded. The cost of tracking receipts, filing refund forms, and complying with the administrative costs of this program are extensive. The capital equipment tax needs to be repealed. Having said that, we recognize that not everyone will get what they want this session. While the Department of Revenue testified at a Senate Tax Committee hearing last session that they believe the time had come to repeal the capital equipment tax, the administration's bill provides relief only for small employers defined as less than 20 employees and annual gross revenues of less than $1 million. This would not benefit me because I have 24 employees. The governor's bill also calls for repeal of the tax on the wood products industry, loggers, and paper manufacturers. The printing industry understands the need to provide relief to the wood products industry, and we support this provision. Minnesota's logging and paper industries are vital partners with Minnesota's printing industry. You might think of Minnesota's loggers, as Representative Atkins referred, the paper companies and printing industries as the three legs of the stool. When one of us is hurting, it directly affects the others. When one of us is growing and getting stronger, it helps the others to grow and get stronger, too. As I mentioned earlier, for every 100 jobs in the printing industry, an additional 133 are created. When printing companies in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota grow, we need more of the paper that is produced in northern Minnesota, and those paper companies, in turn, need more wood from Minnesota loggers. Of course, when I have thousands of dollars sitting at the Department of Revenue and I'm waiting for my capital equipment tax refund, I can't invest those dollars in new equipment and hiring additional employees. And if I'm not expanding my operations, that directly affects Minnesota's loggers and paper companies and the larger Minnesota economy. In conclusion, Madam Chair, Minnesota's printing industry greatly appreciates Representative Atkins introducing this bill and Representative Simpson, Solberg, Paulson, and Tilbury co-signing the bill. We support the targeted industry-specific tax relief for the logging and paper industries contained in the governor's tax bill and ask that you consider including Minnesota's printing industry with these two sister industries when you develop your omnibus tax bill if you are not able to repeal the tax completely on all industries. Thank you for your attention. I would be happy to attempt to answer any questions which you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Jessen. Are there questions for Representative Atkins or Mr. Jessen on this bill? If not, if five groups there, Representative Atkins, I'm going to...
I'll ask the question. I want to mix things up a little bit here. And maybe it's a question for Mr. Michael. We're using the term here, commercial printing industry. Is that defined in statute somewhere? How do we know who's in the commercial printing industry and who's not? Can you help me out there?
Mr. Micro, and maybe Ms. Dalton, who's our sales tax guru.
Madam Chair, Representative Paul, I don't believe that it's defined in the statute. It certainly isn't defined in the sales tax statute. This would be something that the department would then have to essentially decide administratively.
Representative Chair, Ms. Dalton, how does the department do that? If we have a term that is, do they publish a bulletin defining what a commercial printing industry would be? How have they done that in the past when we have terms like that we use in statute that maybe aren't defined in statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cole, Madam Chair, Representative Coles, they would do this through a number of notices. They would do it through a fact sheet, or they would do it through an official revenue notice. They tend not to do rules. I'm looking at somebody from the department right now, seeing if she's agreeing with me. They tend to do most of their administrative work either through a revenue notice or through a fact sheet.
Thank you, Dalton.
Thank you.
I see Mr. Stone is helping you out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
No, he should have gone to there.
Now, as I look through the whole bill, I see that on the third page, we do have at least somewhat of a definition. Again, I'm not sure that I think revenue would probably still need to do something to further define what this is, but I guess that was my question. And I wanted to make sure that there was some definition so that some guy with a Xerox machine isn't a commercial printer.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Representative Atkins,
Madam Chair, I was just going to point out that we defined it on the back.
Okay. Well, if there are no other questions, then I will lay over House File 1144. Thank you, Representative Atkins and Mr. Jessen.
Appreciate
you being here.
Chair and members.
We have one more bill, members. I don't know if Representative Garofalo is in the room or if he has somebody who would like to do his bill. While we're looking for Representative Garofalo, I do want to point out to members in yesterday's Tax Committee. Where we were working on tax compliance with state gov finance, there was in your folder, and you may or may not still have it, a calendar of all the upcoming meetings. Members are probably, if you've looked at it, you see we're scheduling a lot of night meetings now, getting ready to hear not only preparing for what's going to be in the omnibus tax bill, but we will be hearing, of course, many other, omnibus bills through the committee. So, members, I do want to draw your attention that you pull that out and get your legislative assistant to get those on the calendar. With that, I see we've got the with the props here. It's very cute. Representative Rukavina.
I'm glad to actually see that Representative Garofalo acts like a real human being once.
He's got a real dog in the bill.
Madam
Thanks,
Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
And we are going to go, Representative Holmstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, is that dog available to take home?
Yes. Aww. Madam Chair, my apologies. I did not line up somebody to move my bill in advance.
Well, I am happy to, unless there's a member who would actually prefer to. Representative Zellers will move House Bill 1152 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Garofalo, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pat Garofalo, House District 36D. And this is Brittany. Brittany, they think is a half lab, half Brittany, correct? So I am in no means dumb enough to ruin this picture or prop by talking one bit. But members, the bill is fairly self-explanatory before you. Right now, what we do is 501c's, nonprofits, for some reason in the state, when they collect a donation to reimburse for the veterinarian costs of these animals placed, we force them to collect sales tax. There is some legislative history in this bill. Back in 2000, former Representative Darlene Luther carried this legislation. My understanding is that the bill, before entering the legislation, she attempted to have this take place behind the scenes through rulemaking or making sure some sort of clarification, was unable to do so. So she successfully passed through the House and I believe the Senate language very similar to this, but in the end, for whatever reason, this did not make it into law. The fiscal note before you shows an annual impact of $400,000. I'll tell the members of the committee I'm perfectly willing to, if we want to do a, sunset the language after 2 years to utilize some one-time money, if we want to phase it in later, whatever you need to do, whatever we can do to make it happen. For my Republican friends in the committee, I'll tell you it's a tax cut. It's a good bill you can support. To my Democrat friends in the committee, I'll tell you this is good government. It's the right thing to do. But again, I have some testifiers with us here. It will be very brief in the presentation, but we'll be hope for members' support in this legislation.
Representative Garofalo, we do want to hear from your testifiers. I have Representative Rukavina is raising his hands. I think he's going to, I'm just going to guess, but he's going to tell you what that is from the tax committee's perspective. Representative Rukavina.
No, Madam Chair, I just wanted to know if the dog was body trained, and if it isn't, if we can talk until noon.
Well, and Representative Garofalo, I must say, from the tax committee's perspective, it's a spending item. So, just to not rain on your parade here, but all these exemptions, we all have around the table have to find the money to replace it. So I appreciate, though, that it's a very good initiative, and we'd love to hear from your testifiers at this time.
Good morning. My name is Sandra, and I am a volunteer with Last Hope Animal Rescue. Today with me is Bev Orr, the president and founder, and a few special guests that I'll introduce in a minute. Last Hope has been in existence since 1985. We are not an animal shelter, animal seller, or animal dealer. We're in existence to rescue animals only. Since 1985, we have found loving adoptive homes for over 30,000 animals. That's 30,000 animals that governmental agencies did not have to deal with. We take animals that are helpless, abandoned, homeless, stray, unclaimed, abused, neglected, and unwanted. We work with many government agencies, police departments, sheriff departments, social services, and the Minnesota Drug Task Force, just to name a few. We have over 200 volunteers that help in this effort. We are all volunteer. No one is paid a salary, a stipend, per diem, or any reimbursement of any sort. The money collected for adoptions and donations goes directly for the veterinarian care of our rescued animals. In 2006, Last Hope paid $12,287 to the state of Minnesota in sales tax. That $12,000 would have spayed 245 more dogs, vaccinated 1,024 more animals. We would not have used that $12,000 to compensate or stipend any one of our members. What we are asking is to have the Revenue Department define gross sales tax for purposes as that amount which is collected for adoption fees on a monthly basis which exceeds veterinarian expenses for the same period. A quick excerpt from our 2005 tax return. Our veterinarian expenses exceeded $222,000. Our adoption fees for the same period were under $194,000. Trust me when I tell you we're not in the business of selling animals. We would have been out of business a long time ago. We're here to rescue the helpless and abandoned animals. Help us do more. Help us make a difference. A quick quote from our founder insists goes on all of our writing. It's by Walter Crush. If you have men who will exclude any of God's creatures from the shelter of pity and compassion, you will have men who will deal likewise with their fellow men. And today we have with us Brittany and Decker. Brittany's 7.5 weeks. She is available for adoption. She came to us when it was a mismate by a backyard breeder. Her and her 7 siblings are available to the right home. Decker is not available. Decker is 14 years old, came to us 2.5 years ago. And Decker came from social services, was called into a home where it was a neglectful situation. Decker had to have every one of his teeth removed. He's had some other medical problems. His current adoptive owner wouldn't part with him for the world. So we have kind of both ends of the spectrum here. We don't discriminate on age. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sandra, if I may, we do not have your last name. Can we get that
last
record? Name
is Shirley.
Thank you. Ms. Beckerson is keeping minutes for us, and we just wanted to get your name for the record. Did Ms. Orr want to address us as well?
Well, I think Sandy pretty much covered everything. What I can say is it's a very, very good group. Our group is made up truly of people that really care about animals, and we get a lot of support from our local community as far as advertising that we are good, and a lot of people will check with our veterinarians to see if we're good, and I think that's probably one of the best ways to find out what we're doing. And we also, I don't like to advertise it, we help a lot of people who can't afford to get their animals taken care of. But that we can't advertise because of the fact that we can't help everybody. Like I said 100 times, we're not the Bank of America. You know, I wish we were, but we had a case just the other night of a girl who accidentally shut her lab's tail in the, you know, where the hinges are on the door. Well, the dog somehow got the tail in there, and she shut her bedroom door, and the end of the tail was cut off. Well, the vet wanted $350. Her dad was out of work. They didn't know what to do. He called me, and Mr. Walters called me, and just, you know, Bev, please, please help. We've helped them once before with another situation way back when. And so we were able to help this poor dog and this family. So we don't only help animals, we help people. And I just real quick tell you, there was a 98-year-old lady who had adopted a cat from us 18 years before, Penny. She said the day Penny died, she said, my reason for living was, there was no more. She said, I had no family, I had nobody, but Penny was her reason to live. You know, I mean, that's what makes our work worthwhile. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Orr. And I feel that Representative Hillstrom is just really possibly looking at, watching her carefully. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question, Representative Garofalo. Actually, maybe this is for one of the folks in the animal shelter. When you sell an animal, let's just say it's $100, I assume you have a bill of sales that's $100, sales tax 6.5%, $106.05.
That is not correct. We don't sell animals. We adopt them, and I know that it sounds like I'm splitting hairs, but if something goes wrong in the adoption a year or 2 years down the road, we retain responsibility and ownership of that animal. So when we adopt an animal, and if it was for $100, we take the 6.5%, do the math, and it's, you know, whatever the, that is the $12,000 that we part with.
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
I'm a little confused. The bill says that the sale of an animal by you will be exempt from sales tax, and the cost of the sale price cannot exceed your cost.
And I could probably answer that question if I could. We have so many foster homes. Do you see what I'm saying? We have, at any one time, 40 to 50 foster homes. Well, for them to figure out the an adoption day or whatever, to figure out the 6.5%, we just round it off and then take it out of that amount. We never charge a specific amount for sales tax.
Ms. Dalton, did you want to add anything for Representative Demmer's question here?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I believe some of these organizations just take a voluntary donation, and they don't necessarily have a flat fee. So essentially what the department does is require them to pay 6.5% on their gross receipts.
Thank you. Representative Demmer, further?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it just makes it clear for me that you're not adding the sales tax on top. You're paying it out of your, you're paying the sales tax for the people. And Madam Chair, just as a thought, you may want to consider changing and just adding the sales tax to your cost. That way you wouldn't have to be paying it out of your proceeds. But that clears it up for me, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Inspector Ms. Shirley. Do any of these, especially the one that Representative Garofalo has, do they go through any kind of training for either assistance or, you know, for customs for drug dogs? I mean, do they test them for adoption for those folks to put them into, they call it work, but I think some of them actually enjoy their work more than us do down here.
We do, not on every single one, but we have certain dogs that are of the right age and show traits. We have one whose identity is sealed because he kind of has a bounty on his head because he's pretty good, but don't try to get anything in or out of the Minneapolis airport because Officer so-and-so will find you. He's very successful. He's incredibly successful. We've had others that have been put into that position, not worked, and we find a better one that would work, and we take the other one back. Find it an appropriate home. That is our goal, is to match up. I think I could have adopted this puppy out about 300 times on the way down here, and maybe one of those homes would have been the truly right home for it. Yeah. You know, right. So that's what we work really hard on. And again, it's adopting them, and we retain responsibility for these dogs. If something goes wrong, they come back to us.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? If not, I'm going to lay over House File 1152. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Members, the Tax Committee is not meeting tomorrow. The Property Tax Committee is taking this time slot. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, one last thing. I neglected in my opening comments to say thank you very much for the bill hearing that I do.
Thank you. We are adjourned.